Rogers School District is about to get a new leader. A few months ago, the school board decided to hire Dr. Jeff Perry as its next superintendent, replacing Dr. Marlon Berry, who is retiring at the end of June. Dr. Perry has had a long career in education, including the past two decades as a superintendent, most recently in the Hamblin County School District in Tennessee. Hello, everybody. I'm Dave Perosik, and this is the Know the News podcast, a production of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette Newsroom. We have a story coming for you in the newspaper this weekend that I wrote as a way of introducing Dr. Perry to the community, and he was gracious enough to agree to join me for this week's podcast. Dr. Perry, thanks for being here with us this morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
So you officially start as superintendent of Rogers Schools next Friday, is that correct?
I will start July 1. We're already doing a couple of things to get things ready. Actually, I'm going to be moving in some furniture as soon as we get through with this podcast. So it's actually started already. I've made a couple contacts and been in communication with a couple individuals so far. But yes, officially the job will start July 1.
And have you completely settled in Rogers' home yet, or do you still have some unpacking to do?
I don't think that you're ever through with unpacking.
Yeah, that's right.
It's been a situation where we came out here last week, and we have been in the process of getting everything organized and getting everything put up. And so it is a long process. But yes, we are beginning to get settled and really enjoy our new home and location.
Could you talk a little bit about your background? And by that I mean, you know, starting with where you grew up and what your life was like growing up, because I think you have a compelling story to tell there.
Yeah, certainly. I grew up in the southwestern part of Virginia, and we lived there in the coal fields of Virginia. And my mom raised four children by herself. Our dad left us when we were relatively young, and mom had to work three different jobs just to keep the family going. And so she was very active and worked 7 days a week, actually at three different jobs, just to keep the lights on and keep food on the table and those kind of things. And ended up, my mom didn't graduate from high school, neither did my father, and my sister actually had dropped out of school, and education was not really one of those things that was, I guess, highly valued in the house. And so I was fortunate enough, though, to have some extremely dedicated and committed teachers who gave a lot to me to make sure that I was successful. And I was able to graduate high school, and actually had a teacher that helped pay for that first semester of tuition at college to make sure that I could go. And then I, as many people did, you know, during that particular time, I worked a full-time job to pay my way through college and get that degree. But I think the thing that has helped me with it is that it made me appreciate what it takes to get a good education. And it also helped me to understand that there's many students who are at risk out there, that when they begin the educational process, it is not a guarantee that they're going to finish. It is not a guarantee that they get an opportunity to go to college. And so my entire professional career has just been an attempt to repay all of those individuals who did so much to help me be successful along this journey. And I've often said this, I'm not really sure how in the world that a poor boy from Southwest Virginia became superintendent, but I sure do remember every individual who helped me along the way to get here.
So you've been in education, working in education for about 35 years, and you got your first superintendent's job in 2003 for a small school district in Colorado. You've worked for several school districts since then as superintendent, and now you're here in Rogers. So can you tell us what attracted you to this job in particular?
Certainly. We had finished up contract there in Tennessee, and we were looking to come out west. We wanted to see if we could find a school district that was incredibly progressive in a thriving community that we would enjoy living in, and a community that would have that quality of life, you know, that would provide all of those outside activities. And as we began to look, we were looking at some places in Alaska. We were looking at some places in Colorado. And as the headhunter group that conducted the search interview, they called me one day and told me that they had a perfect job for me. And so as I began to look at the community of Rogers and the school system, everything that we were looking for, this community and this school system checked all the boxes. And so we became very excited about this position. And as I began to research the district and community a little bit more, and as I began to have some conversations with the school board, I really realized this was just a perfect fit for us. And so very excited and feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to serve and work here.
Great. And so how do you see the first few weeks of your tenure here playing out once you're officially in charge? You know, how are you going to be spending your time, you think?
Well, I think everything that we do and any success that we have, whether it's in your professional life or whether it's in your personal life, everything begins with relationships. And so the first several weeks is that I'm just using my time to connect with individuals and to create those relationships. So the first several weeks on the job, it's going to be nothing but reaching out to individuals, listening to individuals, and finding out what are the good things in the district that we need to make sure that we continue with. And then what are some things that are areas needing attention that we need to work on and to bolster up. So the first couple of weeks is just a real busy time in terms of meeting those key decision makers and meeting individuals within, you know, the leadership team, and just being an active listener so that we are really sure that when we begin to develop our strategic plan, both our short-term and long-term goals, that we've actually are working on the things that need attention and not just those superficial things that we may be able to complete quickly, but not really deal with any of the issues that really need that kind of intense attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you've already done some meeting with the school district administration, central office people at least. And so you've been meeting with them and from Tennessee via Zoom. And also you were at last week's or Tuesday's school board meeting. So you've, I guess you'll be able to hit the ground running to a certain extent, having met those people and started chatting with them a little bit.
Well, we certainly hope that some of that pre-work will have some benefits. So we have been meeting, or I have been meeting with the leadership team every week through Zoom for the last month. And that was just basically an attempt to keep informed of what was happening. I have had communication with the school board and actually went out to the school board conference with them. And so we were able to have some time to talk about a few things. We actually conducted a survey that we sent out to most individuals within the district and asking for their feedback on what they thought was the most important things that needed attention. And so One of the things that we will do as we start out these first couple of days alongside the whole situation with developing those relationships is that we will begin to analyze the results of those surveys to see what are on the minds of the individuals that we work with. And so as we begin to do that, that should help us get ready for the upcoming school year, because I believe that we've probably got less than a month before teachers come back and things get going. And so it will be a quick turnaround, and we will have to be ready here soon.
All right. And I talked to some of your colleagues there from Tennessee, and people who knew you, know you, about your leadership style. And so I wanted to ask you, how would you describe your leadership style?
I think the thing that I would say is that, and at least I hope, that I am a collaborative leader. I'm an individual who will seek input from a variety of people before we make any major decisions. I think that it's important that individuals have a voice in the decision-making process, because if not, you're not going to have that ownership and that sense of investment that's needed to carry out those decisions. And so before we make any decision, we will invite individuals in and allow them to have a voice so that when we do implement, our chances of success are much better. I also think that I'm probably have a transformative leadership style, and that there are certain times that having a collaborative, open leadership style is critical and important. And there's other times where it may be more of a crisis management system that you just have to make some hard decisions by yourself. And so I think especially during the pandemic, it demonstrated that leaders can't really have just one set of leadership skills. They have to have a wide range of leadership skills to be successful, because things happen quickly and you have a very detailed set plan, but then the environment changes those plans very quickly, and then you have to be able to adapt. So you have to be adaptable, you have to be flexible, but I do think that being open and transparent with everything that we do is critical. I think in this day and age, there is there's probably a great deal of mistrust and cynicism toward leadership, whether it be at the local level, state, or federal level. And there just doesn't seem to be that sense of trust among some of our leaders at various levels. And one of the reasons I think that happens is individuals don't really see that openness and transparency that is critical. So everything that we do try to be very open, try to be very transparent, and we let folks know, whether it's a decision that would be of benefit to everyone, or it may just be something that may be difficult. Regardless, we do let people know this is the direction that we're headed, give people an opportunity to provide input, and then make that decision after we've gained access to all the information that we have. Mm-hmm.
I want to give our listeners a little bit of an idea about your personal life. You and your wife, Amy, have an adult daughter, is that correct?
We do. We have a daughter that's in her 30s, and then we have a granddaughter that is in elementary school currently. And so she is busy with the softball, and she enjoys playing tennis and those kind of things. So we hope that she continues to do that and enjoy those extracurricular activities. Mm.
And you and Amy are avid outdoors people, I understand, and you're particularly into mountain climbing. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I was a mountain climber more when I was younger. It seems like the mountains have gotten a lot higher and steeper as I get older. But yes, we have. I've climbed to the highest point in every state with the exception of Alaska. And then there's about 60 peaks in the United States over 14,000 feet. And we've probably climbed about 35 or 40 of those. We have hiked probably about 600 miles of the Appalachian Trail. I've rode my bicycle across the entire Blue Ridge Parkway and the Skyland Drive. And then we really enjoy hunting. And actually, my wife is a better shot and probably a better hunter than I am. And then we enjoy the fishing and one of the things that I said that I'm doing today, we actually, I have made the furniture to my office. My wife and I do quite a bit of woodworking, and we had a little sawmill, at my previous house, and one of our trees in the yard on the farm that we had was hit by lightning. And so we had to cut that oak tree down, and we cut it up on the sawmill. We built a small little kiln that we had at the house, dried the wood out, and then we built that desk and the computer stand that we will be taking in. So we will load that up today and take that out to school and get that installed so that we will be ready on day one.
Oh, that's really neat. Circling back a little bit to your mountain climbing, you said Alaska is the one state that you haven't climbed the highest peak, which is Denali, right?
Correct.
Mount McKinley, which is quite a serious hike. Any ambition to actually do that someday, or are you?
You know, I would love to do that particular mountain. The problem that well, there's a lot of problems associated with that mountain because it is a serious mountain. But the time investment is a 3 to 4 week process a lot of times. And then it comes at the worst time for public school educators. You actually have to do that in early June. Mm-hmm. And so you would have to get out there in late May, right when graduation is happening, the end of the school year is going on, you know, where a lot of important things are happening. And so it just never worked out that I felt like I could leave the school district at that particular time and be disconnected from everyone in the district during that time to do that. But I actually have a little box that I made within that box, it's got a rock from the highest point in every state. And every day that I go to work, I look at that, and that box for Alaska is empty. And so it does kind of taunt me every single day that when I look at that empty box, that does bother me. But the time frame that's associated with it is difficult. And as I get a little bit older, you also realize that kind of commitment, and because you have to wear about a 40-pound pack, and then most of the time you are dragging close to an 80 to 100-pound sled. And so you're just constantly moving supplies up the mountain, going back, picking up another supply of food, you know, and clothing and different things. And you're just doing that for weeks. So as I get a little bit older, that gives me a little bit more pause to do that. But I've not given up on that particular goal yet. Because I do kind of hate to say that I've done the highest point except. That word there just kind of seems to diminish some of the other accomplishments.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your adventures out there could fill another couple podcasts, but anything else that you want to share with us that we haven't touched on yet?
I think the main thing is that being in the field of education for me is not simply a job. This is something that I feel strongly about. It is something that I believe that public school education is a great equalizer. It will give a child that has no chance, it will give that child the chance that he or she needs to be successful. And I think that there are going to be many students, 15,000 of them will come to school here in a couple more weeks. And some of those children are going to be successful, you know, perhaps regardless of what we do. But there are going to be a significant number of those children who desperately need us. We're the only safe place that they have. We're the only hope that they have to be successful. They come from home lives that are broken, that are chaotic, that are unsafe, that are unstable. And we have the opportunity to work with those children to give them a chance to be successful. Because if we are effective about doing that, then those are the individuals, I think, who can really come out and make a difference in this world, because they realize what it takes to struggle and to be successful. And oftentimes, those particular children have that type of servant heart to go out and make a difference in the world. And so I think for us, and especially for me, I'm excited about this school year. I'm excited about this school district. And I'm very enthusiastic about beginning to work with our teachers and with our children and with our parents in this community, because I think our position at Central Office exists for one reason, and that is to serve and to make sure that those individuals with whom we work with have all the resources, the focus, and the energy to be successful. And so we're just real excited about getting the school year started and beginning to make a difference in the lives of individuals around us.
Dr. Perry, you've been so kind to spend time with us, telling us about yourself, and I really appreciate your time and wish you nothing but the best of luck in the new position.
Well, thank you, my friend, and I look forward to working with you, and hopefully we will have many more opportunities to talk and discuss things within the district. So you take Absolutely. Care, and I wish you guys the very best.
All right. Great. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Jeff Perry, incoming superintendent of the Rogers School District. You can catch my story about Dr. Perry this weekend in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And before I sign off here, I want to tell you about some other great stories we have coming your way this weekend. The catalytic converter is an important part of your vehicle's exhaust system, but catalytic converters are also prized by thieves for the precious metals they contain. This is a problem seen nationwide, including right here at home in Northwest Arkansas, as Benton County reporters Mike Jones and Tracy Neal will tell you about in a story this weekend. There's a good amount of money available to the low-income residents in the city of Rogers for home repairs through the Community Development Block Grant Program. But grant applications there are just beginning to pick up from a pandemic lull. Our Rogers City reporter Garrett Moore will have that story for us. And now that children under 5 can get vaccinated against COVID-19, where do parents go and what do they need to do? What's the demand been like for this age group? Reporter Stacy Ryburn will tackle that topic. And each week, Garrett Moore brings you the news on the restaurant beat with his Let's Eat column, which publishes every Friday. This week's column features a restaurant called Bauhaus Biergarten. I probably slaughtered the pronunciation of that, but it's a restaurant that brings a taste of Europe to downtown Springdale. So he'll tell you about that and more in his column this week. And don't forget, we've got the River Valley covered every Sunday on our River Valley page. Among the stories we'll have, Thomas Ascente will tell you about the Sebastian County Quorum Court considering funding a variety of projects with county money and American Rescue Plan money, including a sobering center and an expanded mental health court. And Monica Brick writes about the city of Fort Smith approving a moratorium on residential construction surrounding the regional airport in order to conduct a sound study and potentially modify area building codes in preparation for the foreign military sales program. Looking for entertainment? Turn to this weekend's What's Up section, where Becca Martin Brown previews the 71st season of Opera in the Ozarks, which has adopted as its theme this year, Love on the Rocks. And April Wallace has a story on this year's Arkansas New Play Festival, which takes place over two weekends in July in Bentonville and Fayetteville. She'll also have coverage of the ongoing Bentonville Film Festival, which started this week. And, of course, don't forget our sports coverage. Keep up Naturals baseball, rodeo of the Ozarks, prep sports, and much more. Again, that's just a sampling of what we've got planned for our readers this weekend. Be sure to check back with us next Friday for our new edition of the Know the News podcast. And if you like it, please subscribe. All you have to do is hit the subscribe button on your device right now. If you're interested in subscribing to our newspaper, please go to our website at nwaonline.com and just click on that subscribe button. Or you can call us at 479-684-5509. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, I'm Dave Porozik, your podcast host this week. Have a great weekend, and until next Friday, so long.